We don't have all of our members here, so we're going to open up a subcommittee on the Senate Committee of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. Today is the 9th of March. We have three items on the agenda today. We're going to have public hearings on Senate Bill 266 and 267. We will also be having a work session on Senate Bill 262. We don't have all of our members here yet for the work session, so we'll come back to that when we get our members here. So we're going to start out by opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 266. And I believe Senator Whitsitt, is this the one you wanted to testify on, right? Please.
Chair Edwards and subcommittee members. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt, representing District 28, Klamath, Crook, most of Lake Jackson, and Deschutes counties. Mr. President, Mr. Chair, committee members, in my opinion, the department's place-based integrated water resources strategies is designed and intended to replace the doctrine of prior appropriations. The entire effort appears to be focused on creating local or regional boards and commissions or other entities to study and make recommendations regarding the highest and best use of local and regional water resources. These non-elected appointed groups will strive to create water use plans that are similar and parallel to the state's land use planning scheme. Who will be responsible for appointing the membership of these boards, commissions, or other entities is never made clear. Water will be allocated toward the selected group's perception of what uses represent the highest and best use, regardless of the ownership of the water rights. Grants will be used to sweeten the bitterness of the local committee, board, or commission's decision to reallocate water currently used for irrigation. During the past 25 years, I cannot think of a single instance where the Oregon Water Resources Department has taken positive legislative action to help enhance the use of water for out-of-stream irrigation. It certainly appears to me that in the department's view, the highest and best use is virtually always for some form of in-stream purpose. In my view, the department's place-based integrated water resources strategies will serve to perpetuate the quarter-centuries-long view of the appropriate use of Oregon's waters. The department has performed extensive outreach regarding the integrated water resources strategies as well as the place-based concepts. I have only attended a few of those meetings. But in those meetings that I've attended, department staff has used the well-established Delphi technique to achieve public support. In fact, they've taken the technique to the level of a new art form. The technique serves to effectively orchestrate public meetings to achieve predetermined outcomes. It always begins with an open mic period where all attendees are encouraged to express their opinions and state their concerns. The department almost always has articulate, well-spoken advocates for the positions that they want the public to support located prominently in the audience. Department staff writes all the points that are made on a white paper, on an easel. You know, you've seen the Mark's Laws. With particular emphasis on the well-articulated points made by department advocates. The meeting is divided into focus groups after everyone has had their opportunity to speak. The department's advocates self-select the appropriate focus groups to attend. Within the smaller focus groups, the department advocates make an impassioned presentation. Any opposition is dissuaded by the department facilitators. Persistent opposition is professionally marginalized. Following the completion of the focus groups, attendees are served refreshments while the facilitators decide what the participants really said. When the meeting is reconvened, apologies are made for the late hour and votes are quickly taken to establish what the facilitators have compiled represents the wishes of the meeting attendees. Staff then quickly gathers up their easels, white papers, and sound systems and head down the road. Meanwhile, meeting attendees sit completely stunned trying to comprehend what just took place and how conclusions were reached that virtually no one in attendance supported. No one in the public ever sees those white papers again. The technique is used repeatedly across the state to establish community support. Another concern, this bill does not appear to identify a source of available funding. How much money will be made available to the department? What will be the source of the money? And finally, this bill provides the department authority to make grants to sovereign nations. I have no opposition to making grants to tribal members or to tribal organizations under their dual citizenship as United States citizens. I do strongly oppose making grants to sovereign tribal entities. Thank you for the opportunity to express my opinions.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator? Comments?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here. Mm-hmm. We are going to leave this public hearing open, but we're going to pivot now since we have actually, I want to wait until Senator Thompson gets here for the work session. So we are going to open up a work session, however, on Senate Bill 260. Excuse me, not a work session. We're going to open up a public hearing. I'm so glad I have staff right here keeping me straight. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 267. And I am going to also make that subcommittee hearing into a full committee hearing. And I'm going to make it official with a gavel tap. So that's how
we go.
And if the department could come up and present to us Senate Bill 267, and then we'll take public testimony on it. And then when we get our other member here, we'll pivot over to our work session on the other unrelated bill to you guys. And but then keep rolling with the testimony on 67 and then 66.
Well, Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Beiler. I'm the director at the Oregon Water Resources Department. On my right is Raquel Rancier, our senior policy coordinator for the agency. And we're pleased to be here to testify in support of Senate Bill 267, a bill which would extend a pilot program that has been in play for a while, allowing irrigation districts to have a more simplified process for place of use transfers within irrigation district boundaries. This is a pilot program that has been that was initially authorized in 2003, involving three irrigation districts. It subsequently was the pilot was renewed after limited use in 2007, and again in 2009. And in 2009, the participating districts were expanded from three to a total of 15. The idea around this program is to allow these districts to have greater flexibility for managing the place of use of water within the district boundaries, provided that those changes of place of use do not create injury to other water right holders or do not enlarge the use of the water right. And these transfers are considered to be – they are temporary, by the way, if I – failed to say that. That's a major point here. They're considered to be relatively low risk because we're talking about transfers that are happening within within the patrons who are served by the district and within those boundaries. The process that is involved is very much more simple and much more localized in coordinating with our local water masters on potential places of uses. Our desire at this point, as we've monitored in the program, we've seen some participation, but our view is that we're not at a point now, we don't have enough participation information to be able to make a determination on whether this should be a permanent program or not. And our recommendation is to continue the pilot effort moving forward. I want to also make note that in working with stakeholders, we are recommending a dash one amendment to this bill that would add some, I think, some helpful clarification. Essentially, the bill would make it clear that the place of use transfers under this pilot program would apply to temporary transfers of irrigation use only, which has been our expectation from the beginning, but this would make it clear. and also would provide some notification opportunities associated with expected participants among those districts within the program, but also allow for a notice if a district chooses to essentially swap into one of the positions under the identified districts. There is a provision within this program that allows for districts who aren't specifically mentioned within the bill to be able to participate, provided they provide, in this case, they would need to provide notice up in advance. They would be held to the same standards as the existing districts who participate in this program. So with that, Chair Edwards, I think I'll close and see if there are any questions.
Any questions from members of the committee for the department?
I do. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Tom, either you or Raquel, could you tell us, so these are pilot projects, and so in a sense they're experimental. And so could you tell us a little more about how they're working?
Mm-hmm. Chair Edwards, Senator Dembrough, we issued a report to the legislature, and we can certainly get that an additional copy to you at the beginning of the year, the calendar year, the report, our most recent report on this. What we're seeing is that, by and large, the participation there of the 15 districts that are involved in this program, four have been very active participants, and the others are more variable in their level of participation. We've seen that, by and large, that the temporary transfers involved with these have gone on well, and that we've avoided injury. We did identify two issues of enlargement of the place of use. Those were addressed quickly, which is good, that we were able to catch those in a timely manner, and they were corrected quickly, voluntarily, by the districts that were involved. So far, we're seeing promise, but again, I think that we just need a more experience both on our end and I think with the districts to have a clearer idea whether this should be a permanent program or not.
Any other questions? Yes, Senator.
From the original bill, what was the necessity of the amendment?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, in some conversation with some stakeholders, there were some interest in there is some significant difference in the process associated with this pilot program versus our traditional transfer programs. And we had some feedback that while folks understood the value of having these simplified processes for districts, that there would be some value in having notices associated with some of the participation so that people would know who's participating and they would know which water master to contact if they had questions about the program. And we felt that was appropriate and wouldn't undermine the purposes of this expedited process. Similarly, there was some confusion and discussion about what types of transfers would be subject to these temporary transfers. Our feeling was that the bill was pretty clear that it was intended to be irrigation uses, but that wasn't expressly clear, and we felt there was no harm in making that clear so that stakeholders understood what types of uses were subject to this pilot.
Follow up, yeah.
I guess the next question will be 20 days on the pilot project. You have 20-day notice. I guess the question would be, does this 20 days, will that fit in a window where the irrigation can actually be used, or will it at some point push the irrigation beyond where it can be used, you know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, it's a good question. We did work closely with the Oregon Water Resources Congress to make sure that timeline was acceptable from their standpoint and felt certain from their assurances that would not create a risk on their part. I imagine you'll be hearing from them as well on this bill.
One more follow-up.
Yeah.
Since the original bill was really kind of teeny, and the amendment is pretty concise, is that because you had the concerns, or people came in with concerns about this in itself? Because basically it just said it's going to move it on to the 81st Legislative Assembly. The process is not already working functionally, and we had to amend it to fix it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, the key impetus for asking for the bill was to extend the sunset period for the program. That's why the original bill looks very simple and very streamlined. As sometimes occurs when we're looking at legislation and possible bill ideas, people come up with thoughts they hadn't thought about in the past, perhaps related to the program. And I believe that was the genesis of the ideas of the additional pieces of the amendment.
Okay, one follow-up.
Yeah.
People are going to come up and testify against this?
Or is this Mr. Chair, Senator Olson,
well worked on?
I'm not aware of any opposition.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up April Snell.
She's got a great golf tournament at Eagle Crest.
Good afternoon. For the record, April Snell, Executive Director with the Oregon Water Resources Congress, Chair Edwards, Vice Chair Olson, Senator Przanski, and Senator Dimbro. See, I can't do that if there's a whole committee here. thank you very much for your time. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 267 with the Dash 1 amendments. You have, or you will have, my written testimony in front of you, and I won't go through all that or rehash the good director's overview of the program. Suffice to say that OWRC represents irrigation districts and other water delivery suppliers around the state, and the 15 participants are our members. And OWRC has been a proponent of this program since its first inception. And in working backwards, just reflecting on Vice Chair Olson's questions in regards to the amendments, from OWRC's perspective, the program is working just fine, but we're looking forward to the future and wanting to have this program permanent. And so to that end, we would like to address any stakeholder concerns as they arise during this pilot process and hopefully address those so that when we do come forward to the legislature to ask for this program to be permanent, that we have those concerns addressed. And I also would like to have hearings where you don't have folks in opposition, and so that is in part why you have amended language. And I think it does clarify some existing provisions of the program, and it's important that our members feel that this program is transparent and accountable. So the main reason why we have this program is because temporary transfers can sometimes take a little bit of time to process through the traditional method. And while the department has done great work in reducing their backlog of applications, it still can take a little bit more time than someone who wants water right now for this irrigation season. So this is only with water within the district boundaries, irrigation water rights that are managed by the districts, and there are many safeguards in place to ensure that all the landowners are consenting to the transfer and that the lands where the water was used are dried up, so to speak, and put on the new lands. And then at the end of the irrigation season, that water returns to its previous place of use and provides that water right holder with the flexibility to do with what they see fit in the next irrigation season. And this is particularly useful in areas where you have a lot of different parcels of land and not enough water to go around, which is pretty much the story around the state. And this allows some flexibility to someone who maybe is putting in a different crop and doesn't need as much water to be able to have that water go somewhere else where another farmer can put it to good use. It's also useful in circumstances where you may have, say, a family emergency or something that happens where the original farmer can't put it to beneficial use, and so this allows someone else to use that water to its fullest benefit without having to go through a longer process. And all the traditional provisions of a regular temporary transfer process have to be met, and the department has the ability to shut off any transfer or discontinue any participating district's participation in this program. So I think, you know, the economy has been down the last few years, and that is in part why there hasn't been the level of participation that we would like to see in the program. Additionally, we've worked with the Water Resources Department in particular in the last 2 years to do extensive training between department and participants with the district, so they know how this works, how it's beneficial, and all the things that need to be done on both sides. Again, looking ahead to the future when hopefully we can have this program as a permanent feature so that Oregon's irrigation districts have the flexibility they need to manage a very finite water resource. So with that, I won't take any more of your time and would be happy to answer any questions you may have about the program, my testimony, or anything in between. Thank you very much.
Thank you, April, and thank you for the well-comprised summary of OWRC's position, the background, the history, the amendment. I appreciate that. So, any questions by members of the committee?
Okay. Thank you.
It doesn't look like we have any questions. That's all that's signed up on 267. I know there are other people here for 266, and we're going to go back to that. But before we do that, would anybody else like to testify on Senate Bill 267? Okay. Then we're going to pivot back to Senate Bill 266, which I had previously opened up the public hearing on so that Senator Whitsitt could testify and then get back to his business, other committees. So we're going to, I'll close the hearing on the public hearing on Senate Bill 267. We're continuing with Senate Bill 266. Tom and Raquel, you want to come up and present on 266, and then we'll go into testimony.
Thank you, Chair Edwards, members of the committee. Again, Tom Beiler, the director of the Water Resources Department, and Raquel Rancier, senior policy coordinator for the department. We're here to testify in support of Senate Bill 266, which supports an effort called place-based planning, and appreciate the opportunity to be here today to give you a sense of our thoughts and interest in this area. I want to, first of all, just give a little context around the idea that we're calling place-based planning. It's generated out of the work of the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. And it's in part a recognition that the water supply issues of the state are complex and complicated and often contentious and often expensive to try to resolve. And that there was a desire by our commission, in concert with working with a policy advisory group, as well as communities around the state who we consulted with around the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, to look at some different mechanisms, some different processes about by which we could look at and talk about what our future might look like in different parts of the state with respect to water supply. And when I talk about water supply, I do mean it in a very broad sense, looking at both in-stream and out-of-stream interests. And the idea around place-based planning is to allow for folks within a certain geography, an area, could be a basin, it could be a sub-basin, but we are talking about a hydrological unit rather than a governmental jurisdictional unit, to gather together, representing the broad interests that that live within that community, to discuss and develop a vision of the future for themselves around water. What are the needs anticipated, and what ways can they meet those needs? We feel that's a very important exercise for communities to go through if they so desire. The reason we're bringing this bill forward, in part, is the probably the most important aspect of this bill is that it would authorize the department to be able to issue and award grants to support anyone interested in doing this kind of planning process. And that is on the heels of Senate Bill 839 from the 2013 session, which created the basis for a grant loan program at the department that we've been working in earnest with a couple of different task forces over the course of this biennium, and we're now engaged in a rulemaking exercise to have that program up and running. Our proposed budget for this coming biennium also contemplates some significant resources, capital, lottery bond, and general obligation bond resources that would be used to help support this 839 program. Most of those resources are targeted for specific projects, whether they be efficiency projects, piping projects, or supply, storage, groundwater, surface water storage, or even in-stream projects that would qualify under that program. There's also a portion of those funds that would be available for a program that we've had since about 2008, which would allow for feasibility grants. And the third piece of the overall program is this place-based planning approach, which again is a voluntary collaborative process that would allow folks who may not know exactly how to go about meeting their needs to have a forum by which they could move forward on that that desire. And the state in this case, if we receive the funding and the authorization through this bill, would be able to award competitive grants to communities who are seeking to have resources to help facilitate those discussions as we would move forward. We are, we've had some conversations with our stakeholders. We've been talking with our stakeholders about this idea for some time now, associated with a lot of, with the work that we've been doing around the implementation of Senate Bill 839. More recently, associated with this bill, we have we recommend dash two amendments, which I think you should have in front of you. Based on conversations we've had with our stakeholders, that would make what we think are some improvements to the bill, and they involve a couple of things, well, three things. One, it would delete the eligibility for federal agencies to be able to receive these funds. Secondly, it lays out more detail on expectations on how these place-based planning efforts should be comprised and how they would perform. And third, it creates a sunset around on this authorization for January of 2025. So I think I'll pause there and see if you have any questions about this.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
Could you define once again exactly what placed base integrated water strategies are?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think the idea behind it is that we would, rather than the state imposing its will on folks or the federal government or some other entity imposing its will on what water supplies should be available, that we want to empower a collaborative effort and that would allow the different folks who are living in the community. And again, I'm being a little vague because we don't want to be too prescriptive. But so, for example, you could be looking at a basin, an Eastern Oregon basin, that would involve ranchers, municipalities, county government, a wide variety of different folks who are in that area, creating an opportunity for them to gather and meet to discuss what they want for their area in terms of water supply. And it's an opportunity for them to work with us and others in figuring out how, what are those needs, what are those expected needs over time, and what resources might be available to tap into. And frankly, in many cases, we're going to be looking at significant investments either in water delivery systems to improve them or storage and supply options or even groundwater recharge to be able to help these communities meet their long-term needs. Our feeling is that through creating these collaborative efforts that you create some political and social capital locally that can help help those communities be more successful in what are, I think, very complicated and difficult prospects towards these big ticket projects that will help them with their supply needs in the future.
So then when you put this collaborative group together of all those, as you mentioned, your description, are they the ultimate purveyors of what happens, or are you the ones that step in and say we like this or we don't like it and agree with it and approve it?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, that's a great question. As with anyone who is looking at kind of their vision for the future, whether it's in water or other elements that are helpful for communities to be resilient and thrive over time, there are a lot of different forces out there that folks have to work within. One of them is state water law. All these considerations are bound within the state water laws that exist today. Other issues that these groups will have to contend with are federal programs like the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act. These are not, as you know, not easy subjects and easy bodies of law to deal with, but they have to be considered as people look through what their options might be. So it's very contextual within those realities that folks have to deal with.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get to is if once they, because they use it every day, they know, and they know the laws and they follow the laws, once they put together a plan, can the federal government come in and say, we don't like your plan, or the state step in and say, we don't like your plan, you need to do it all over again? Or are you guys involved throughout?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I think a successful effort will include those players right from the get-go. My intention would be for the Water Resources Department to be at the table working with these folks to help them understand the law and the policies and work through the problem solving associated with it. My hope would be, especially if there was a lot of federal lands associated with the area that we're looking at, that we would have strong participation from federal agencies as well. They could be very useful in an advisory role. My expectation is that at the end of these processes, folks will be coming forward with project ideas. So they might apply to the 839 program to look for feasibility grants to test drive their ideas to see if they're viable as projects. Or maybe they'll be ready to seek some project funding from the state, the federal government, or from other sources. So that's helpful.
It is. Fellow?
Yeah.
Along the line of financing, how many dollars do you have available for this? It says within your resources, but what could that be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, well, for place-based planning under our budget request, we're asking for $750,000 for the next biennium. So a relatively small share of the total request that we have for capital funds for our 839 program.
I have one other question, if you don't mind.
Yeah, and then we'll go to Senator Thompson.
I noticed in your Integrated Water Resources pamphlet that you talked about the regional solutions coordinators. Would they be involved in this if they don't have experience with water itself, or is that going to be part of the mix?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I don't know. If they had some useful expertise that they could bring to the table that the group thought was beneficial, I certainly wouldn't want to preclude them. I think it will just be a case-by-case basis.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Chair Edwards. So I'd never heard of place-based planning before, so I Googled it, and I got this probably 80-page thing that talked about California, Texas, and some other state. Utah? What other state? Anyway, a couple different states. And it just went down and down, down, down. And I read through that whole thing, and I still don't know what place-based planning means. So I kind of got the assumption that what this meant was, in the end, maybe when we're done, you're going to get a building permit, and you're going to have to see how that impacts the water basin now on some whole system. So it looks like it's tied into the land use planning somehow, if you read through that 25 pages. So I know we have great district water resource committees all over our state that function in the basins, and we've been doing that for how long? 10 years or so. What? Why do? Are we reinventing the wheel here, or why are we going away from that process? That process seems to work real well. This seems to try to tie our basins into land use planning. Can you expound on that?
Chair Edwards, Senator Thompson, I'd be happy to. Thank you. So I want to be clear that that this is a voluntary process, and we're not requiring anyone to utilize this. And in terms of the term place-based planning, quite honestly, I don't care what we call it. It's really the notion is to create an opportunity for communities who share a basin or a sub-basin and those water resources to pull together to develop a long-term vision for the resource and their need to meet their needs in the long term. They don't have to do it. They don't have to. What that offers is an alternative to what might otherwise occur, which could be that the farmers and ranchers pursue their own interests, the municipalities pursue their own interests, the conservation groups pursue their own interests, and those interests may or may not dovetail and could conflict. So, you know, the main point here is that this is not a mandatory process. It's voluntary. It's designed to try to bring people together toward a shared vision. And our hope is that we'll have less conflict in the end and more opportunity to meet the needs of the broader community that would be engaged in this effort.
Follow up. Yeah. So you mentioned $750,000 to the budget, and I always wonder, well, who's going to end up with that money? That why can't the water resources group in the Hood River County Basin, why can't they apply for dollars like that now and do their own 10-year plan without having to start something else? Why can't they make a 10-year plan without doing something like this? And if you're starting this new program out, $750,000, who's going to get that money?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, the folks in Hood River would be a great candidate for these kinds of resources. They've done some excellent work there, which I think exemplifies some of the characteristics that we're looking at here. You know, this is a new program. We're building it. And so I think we want to be very open to looking for ways to make it work for communities. And so that's part of the reason why we're trying not to be overly prescriptive with how we frame this program, because we'd like to have some flexibility as we move forward. We are looking at, our proposal would be to have this be a competitive grant process, which would allow communities of interest to put their best offer forward in terms of how they would use the resources toward these broader purposes.
Follow up? So, yeah, follow up. Thank you. So is this new money? What program are we going to lose, or other thing that we're doing right now out in our counties that is going to get this money now that we're not?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, thank you. I apologize for not closing the loop on that earlier. This bill is simply authorization, and it's dependent upon resources. And the resources that we would seek are seeking as part of our budget request for this coming biennium is a package of capital financing. Our total ask in the budget is $50 million. What we're asking for this particular program, of that total, would be $750,000 for the next biennium.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
I just want to say I really like the concept of these place-based collaboratives. I mean, the whole notion of place-based is that we don't have a one-size-fits-all as far as these projects go, and these projects are often, very ambitious, and so people are going to have mixed feelings about them, and better to bring people together and prevent lawsuits and future obstruction. If you can make that happen. And so I think, potentially given the payoff for some of these projects in terms of, bringing bring water to places that currently don't have water, and, you know, driving economic investment from that in a way that doesn't harm the environment, right? So we're satisfying all of our concerns. There's potentially a very big payoff there. So I think what you're looking for some of the capital funding is lottery bonds, right, within the framework of economic development, essentially.
Mr. Chair, Senator Edwards, that's correct.
Senator Olson?
I forgot to ask a question. How will this affect the basins, the 18 basins we have, 17 are which all set up, and we've got the Klamath Basin. How does this affect the way they operate? Will this change their operability because somebody comes in and says, like, for the Klamath Basin, we've got an idea that will work better than what we have? Will this change the basins?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, probably, well, I guess it depends. From a regulatory standpoint, in terms of the body of law, whether it's the water law or other laws, this wouldn't have an impact. What this could change for the community over time would be where they focus their energy around their future water supplies. So it will inform their decisions and actions, perhaps, of what they want to do with respect to developing water supplies for the future, both for in-stream and out-of-stream purposes. So from that standpoint, it could influence the activities that are generated locally and around how they want, what their priorities are and how they want to focus their energy. But it wouldn't have an impact in terms of the current regulatory programs, for example, that are out there.
Oh yeah. Hypothetically, if a group got together in this place base and they decided that they need a reservoir in their basin, wouldn't that affect the overall basin plan? If they wanted to build a reservoir to collect water, doesn't that kind of go contradictory to what the basin plan would be?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I'm not sure if you're referring to the basin plans that we have in rule associated with the various basins around the state, but there's a lot of opportunity for communities to build reservoirs or pursue whatever means they want with respect to their water supply. That doesn't mean it's an easy path, and it may mean that they will need to look to the Water Resources Department or other agencies for help to get there. I don't know what that means exactly, because it will all depend on the specifics of the issue, but I'm guessing that some of these issues will be complex and complicated, but I'm not anticipating that building a reservoir, for example, will have an impact on our basin plans. But I'm not quite sure if I'm following your line of question there.
Well, it's the presumption of oldest water right gets the water. And if the plan comes in and a group comes in and says, hey,
Thank
we
you.
Decide to develop a reservoir, then
Thank
you know,
you.
Who gets
yeah.
the water?
Senator Edwards. Senator Olson, thank you. That now I think I understand what you're getting at. We have most areas of the state, water is fully appropriated for surface water during the times when people need it most. We have there's more water available for storage than there is for direct appropriation. So we often think about direct appropriation as kind of the main water use, and that's historically been the main water use, people taking the water directly out of the stream, applying it to their land. By and large, throughout the state, that water is fully appropriated during the times when people need it most. Stored water, water available typically outside of the irrigation season in the winter months, there's a fair amount of that still available. The reason it hasn't been appropriated yet is because it's expensive and complicated to build, which again, for us, underscores the value of having these collaborative efforts to help develop a game plan around how to pursue those interests.
Okay, thank you.
I have a quick question. So the Umatilla project that's being considered by the legislature this legislative session, would that be an example of a project that or a strategy that might be developed under something like this, or is that a little bit different?
Chair Edwards, I certainly within the realm of the possibilities. In fact, the effort that's underway now with some of the irrigators in the ports and municipalities in that basin were participants in a Columbia River study task force, or the CRUST effort. I can't remember what the acronym stands for, which is akin to a place-based effort. I would argue that there's some similar aspects to that, which brought a wide variety of folks together to look at options for their future.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next, I'm going to call up a panel of three. You didn't sign up together, but I'm just calling you all up at the same time. April Snell, Tracy Rutten, and Katie Fast.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tracy Rutten, here today with League of Oregon Cities. And also on behalf of both municipal drinking water providers as well as our wastewater providers, here today to support Senate Bill 266. In our opinion, this bill positions Oregon very well in taking an additional step, but really a very, I think, important step towards addressing our future water supply needs. We commend the department for the collaborative process that they led, which we were a part of both through our League of Oregon Cities Water Policy Committee as well as the Oregon Water Utilities Council, whose members comprise and collectively provide water for 75% of the state's population. As you've already heard today, surface water in the state is over-allocated in many parts of the state in the months when the water demand is at its highest. Obviously, this is a great concern to our communities as well as the folks that you're about to hear from today. We need to be able to position ourselves better in the state to be smarter about how we use the water, which means working together among a variety of stakeholders and a variety of water user interests to come up with some, I think, more strategic, innovative, and collaborative solutions to addressing very complex problems that we all face. We believe these solutions will include projects such as conservation strategies across a variety of different users, as well as for us, one thing that we're very interested in is water reuse projects that will look to better match the quality of water with the type of use. One example is using treated wastewater to irrigate. For example, some folks have used that water to irrigate things like golf courses. So while you're using some of that warmer water then for that irrigation application, you can leave the cooler water in stream for fish. So it provides an environmental opportunity in that regard, as well as then an opportunity for our folks who have discharge permits and temperature requirements that they must meet for that wastewater. So I think that really in terms of the discussion today that we see this as a great opportunity because as these problems become more complex and involve a variety of folks that need to come to the table who maybe historically have not had a lot of trust and haven't come to the same table to talk about ways to better manage the resource together, collectively and collaboratively, I think that in that discussion you need sort of an avenue to have the conversation, but you also need to have, I think, some neutral parties involved. Obviously, if you're doing these projects across different types of users, there's always going to be the question of, well, who pays for that then? You know, and if somebody is seen as having sort of that financial stake in the game, then that trust is already shifted. So we see this as a really great opportunity to have some very, good conversations to be able to find collaborative solutions that will help us all. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll save questions to the end of the panel. So.
Good afternoon. For the record, Katie Fast with the Oregon Farm Bureau. I want to discuss the -2 amendments. Farm Bureau did have some concerns about the original drafting of the bill, that the discretion given the department was too broad and that it didn't ensure that it would really be an open, transparent process at the local level. So there were discussions with the department, and they're bringing forward the -2 amendments. We're pleased to see these. We believe that they better define the process, ensuring that it is collaborative and balanced. that it works within state water law, which I think addresses some of Senator Whitsitt's concerns that he expressed earlier, and that the process on the ground is open and transparent, and it really brings in that local community from all interests into the planning process. Additionally, the Dash 2 amendments add in a 10-year sunset, so it gives us a time to come back here and see if the goals that the department expressed out are actually being met, and it's having the success on the ground that many folks believe it will have. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. April.
For the record again, April Snell with the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and here in support of the concept of place-based planning and of the Dash 2 amendments. OWRC did work with Farm Bureau and the department on those amendments and think that they add a little bit more clarity to what is a little bit of a vague concept. And my counterparts have already expressed some of the benefits of the program, but I'd just like to share a little bit more about what this notion of place-based planning is and why the irrigation district community would find it something of value. This concept came from the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, which was an over year-long process in which stakeholders from every sector of water, and I do mean every sector of water, sat around a table and tried to figure out what Oregon needed when it comes to water and how we could get there. There's a long list of recommendations that came out of that process, and this concept of place-based planning was one of those, but it was one that was discussed towards the end of the process, and it didn't get a whole lot of detail as far as what does that mean. And so depending on who you ask, it might mean a little bit different of a thing. What do you mean, place-based planning? So a couple things. One is the Water Resources Commission has taken a step forward in trying to give this concept a bit more detail and did adopt some draft guidelines for how place-based planning would work at their August commission meeting that I think does share a little bit more about how that would work. And then from our perspective, I think this is a tool that would be a voluntary mechanism with hopefully some financial and technical assistance to go along with it, where communities could come together and get at a table and start talking about what they need to meet their water needs and what are some things they might need to do to get there. And this would be a very initial step that could theoretically lead to then coming back and applying for feasibility grants to take some of those storage conservation and efficiency opportunities and see what might be really viable, and then come back and look at implementing those most feasible projects. And I think this place-based planning would be really helpful, or just kind of getting people at the table. That's how I look at it, is it's a way to get people at the table and get them to talk about their water needs and start establishing trust, which is a really difficult process. And whether it's the Hood River, Deschutes Basin, Klamath Basin, or even here in the Willamette, we could all use a little bit of help to get folks at the table and start talking about our water needs in a collaborative fashion. So with that, Senator, I see you have a question, so I will pause and answer any questions you might have.
Senator Thompson.
So who is the owner or LC or who would you hire to do place-based planning? What outfit out there is the authority on that, and who will we hire to come and teach us how to do this? Who gets the money?
So Senator Thompson, Chair Edwards, members of the committee, I'll take a shot at that. So I think one of the reasons why the bill language is broad is because depending on what area of the state you're in and what sort of stakeholders you might have, that will necessitate what type of convener you might need, whether it's, for example, a group of county commissioners, or whether you would need to hire a facilitator from, you know, a professional outfit that provides those services. And I think it would be very unique to the individual basin. And I should say also from my perspective, this is something that would likely be in collaboration with state and federal entities. And like in the Hood River Basin, you had the Bureau with the Water Smart Basin Study that was kind of facilitating or kickstarting the planning process there. So I think it's really a matter of what folks are at the table and what they see is best needed. But this could allow for a group of people to hire a facilitator who would be a neutral third-party person to get these planning processes started. But I don't know.
Well, I might add one. Senator Edwards, Senator Thompson, one discussion we've had as an example, and it's one that Tracy brought up, is the water reuse, where an irrigation district and a city could come collaboratively forward with a grant to Water Resources Department and start a planning process around water reuse. This is done quite a bit in collaboration with cities and agriculture in California. We have opportunities here in Oregon, and as it does help us meet water quality goals, and I think it's something that we have a lot of opportunity for. So, I mean, that's one example where you get maybe non-traditional partners working together collaboratively on a grant to bring forward a Water Resources Department.
Chair Edwards and Senator Thompson, just one thing to add, and I think that the question is a good one, and I'll probably look to the department to see if they nod with what I'm about to say, which is why I think we landed on the concept of a pilot type of project for this first phase, is to sort of see what kind of opportunities are out there and create some best practices. So there are probably some bases, and so I would imagine that are better aligned at this point to maybe go through this process, that I think some other basins that aren't quite there yet can hopefully look to see sort of what worked and what didn't work and maybe set up best practices for the future. And now I'll look to see. Yep. Okay.
Senator Olson, you had a question?
Well, of course. Thank you. On the dash 2 amendments, I know you guys worked on it pretty diligently. Do you have any concerns whatsoever that if you put together a place-based integrated plan, that it says in here that the department will facilitate it, but do you have any concerns that they won't just come in and modify the whole thing? Or are you pretty well certain that this is going to work as per planned?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I think that's a great question. I believe, and I think it's a faith step that we're all taking, that if local people want to find local solutions, that they are going to try to drive this process locally. And that is why we're seeing the interest in place-based planning, is that water use is complicated, and it's getting more complicated. And we have local communities that are struggling in meeting kind of their future. And I think they're going to hold the department to task through that process. But you're correct. I mean, there's no guarantees in the statute that would happen. But this is just really their step on putting a plan together. It does not bind them in terms of rules that they're going to have to follow from that plan. It's really their plan on how they're going to build a project, what that project may be. It may be efficiency, it may be storage, it may be something totally different. And then they're going to have to work through our regulatory statewide framework to get that project done.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this panel?
Okay. Thank you all
for being here. Next, I'm going to call up Richard Kosasan, Eric Kanzler, and Peggy Lynch. And those are the last three people that have signed up. If there's anybody else that wants to testify on this bill, be ready to go when these three are done.
Thank you.
Chair Edwards, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Kanzler. I'm here representing the city of Bend. We're here to support Senate Bill 266. The city participated in the state's integrated water resources strategy planning, and supports the types of local and integrated planning efforts contemplated by Senate Bill 266. Moreover, given the existing planning and collaboration framework in the Deschutes Basin, we feel that that is a perfect opportunity to pilot this type of activity and to start exploring some of the solutions that would be possible, again, as anticipated by this program. As you may know, the Deschutes Basin is regulated by a unique groundwater mitigation set of rules that prevents any new water rights from being created unless they're mitigated through other means, bucket by bucket. So that means we need to be very creative. We need to be very forward-looking in our efforts as we plan for the needs of all users in the basin, whether it's municipal, agricultural, or in-stream uses. We've had a number of past planning processes that have identified opportunities to conserve water, the piping and lining of irrigation district canals being first and foremost among those. At a certain point, all of the low-hanging fruit is going to be picked. And so from our perspective, it's critical that we keep the local planning process rolling, we keep the conversations going, we keep the creative juices flowing, quite frankly, and help ensure that we have an ability to meet the users of all of the ability to meet the needs of all of the users in the basin in a balanced fashion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League participated in the Integrated Water Resources Strategy Project as well. And besides the policy advisory group, which was broad-based and multiple interests, there were also multiple state agencies that participated in that process. And federal agencies came to the table and also assisted and provided information. So the first message I want to get across is the Integrated Water Resources Strategy was a broad-based, multifaceted, multi-agency, multi-layers of government project for which I think we can all be really proud. So now it's time to begin implementing. We need to begin to figure out how are we going to do this. And amongst the things that are happening this session is the money that is in the governor's budget related to water storage projects, and subsets of grant opportunities, of which this would be one. So I want to point out the dash twos, because we do support the bill with the dash twos. Lines 6 and 7 say that are consistent with state laws concerning the water resources of the state. So that's really clear, that this planning effort has to be consistent with our state laws. And then line 19-20, be developed in collaboration with a balanced representation of interests. This is simply an opportunity to bring broad groups of people together in local areas, because each basin, each subset, has its own special challenges and its own special opportunities. So local planning, getting people together to have a vision of where they would like to be as we address the issue of water in the state, both quantity and quality, is really important. So the local planning effort is really the best use of these grant funds and of staff time, and we support this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Just go through the panel, and then we'll go to questions. Go ahead, Richard.
Chair Edwards, Richard Kosasan with Water for Life. And perhaps we might be a little bit different with our approach. The concerns I have heard associated with Senate Bill 266 kind of flow along the lines of land use planning. 266 is expected to be locally driven, and most people would agree that our land use planning process is locally driven. There might be a few flies in the ointment there, according to some, but that is one of the major concerns. In terms of the bill as structured, I think there are two or three or four major shortcomings. We have yet to clearly delineate a definition of place-based planning. The funding mechanism is undefined. There's no limitation up or down. The department previously has indicated that they're looking at $750,000 for planning. But in terms of those dollars, whether it's $750,000 or $7.5 million or whatever, I don't believe the bill as constructed clarifies any specific use of those funds. The department held a series of, I guess, roundtable discussions concerning the place-based planning efforts. Attending one, I think the feeling I had was most of the people there felt very clearly that it was basically a problem in search of a solution. If you can identify a specific problem, I think then it's easier to come up with a solution. Absent the identification of the problem, I think you tend to be moving in too many different directions. I think some options exist. I would strongly encourage a consideration for the development of a definition of place-based planning. I would look at some parameters around the program, and then I would take a look at existing planning efforts. Basin planning has gone on for years and years and years. If that is not adequate, the initial identification of the problems associated with basin planning, as we have experienced it, I think would be helpful and prudent course before embarking on a new endeavor. With that, Mr. Chair, the last point I would make is found with the dash two amendments and section two, sub four, the commission may adopt rules for the administration of this section. And again, I think that pinpoints one of the problems. We don't have any specific target. It's nebulous at best. And I would encourage further clarification and the development of some parameters with the bill. And I would be happy to do that.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions?
Yeah.
Senator Thompson.
Yeah. When you say local planning, I mean, I was a county commissioner, so I know when you say local planning, that means our planning department. I know we have our water basin groups in each county, or at least Hood River County, just because I live there, I know, and they do these things. So what do you see different in what we're doing now, where they're all local people, all growers, there's extension people that know about all the water issues in our county. What do you see this doing differently, and what is it going to be, a county process or kind of maintain kind of something like it is now?
Senator Edwards, Senator Thompson, so let's see, I can't figure out another word to use besides planning.
No.
But that's not the concept here. The concept is what you heard from the previous panel, bringing disparate groups together who all have an interest in water quality and quantity in this state. And respectfully, in Hood River County, it sounds like much of the work that has been done by you and others has been a positive collaborative effort. Mm-hmm. That is not true around all the state of Oregon. And we're talking instead in this particular case, and that's why it's called place-based instead of some specific definition. It depends on where the rivers flow, where the water is. It's the water connectivity that's an important part of this conversation rather than the governmental entity. So I think you heard that it could be county commissioners that are doing this. It could be a region. But it really needs to be focused around the water and where the water is or where it isn't, and having the groups of people who care about and want to address the needs of water all sitting at the same table, trying to figure out a multitude of solutions, because we don't all know what each solution might be in a particular basin, in a particular area. And that's the important part of this conversation. Let's have people who know their areas and make them broad enough so we're not just talking about one small little reach of a river, but we're actually talking about broad areas of water. Have the conversation about the multitude of ways that we can address making sure we have high quality, abundant water, which was the mission of the Water Resources Strategy. Is that helpful?
Yeah, follow up.
Well, I know our local, they came up and everything that they do works on consensus. So okay. Is place-based planning based on consensus, or is it state-run? Is it majority rules? Any ideas?
So, Senator Edwards, Senator Thompson, having been a part of the process, I don't see, yes, I would assume that it will be consensus driven, and it will not have an outcome that says you must do this. They will come up with what they believe is the best way to address their water quality and quantity. But then they have to go back to, if they're going to apply to the state for specific grants to actually fund some of their projects, they're going to have to make that case before the decision makers of those grants. This is simply a planning process. This is not a final arbiter's decision. I vote for this reservoir and I vote for this irrigation project. I don't see that as part of this. This is having a conversation amongst all the parties in the area where the water is and isn't, we have high quality, abundant water for all Oregonians for all uses.
I didn't take time to dig too deep, but I found California's idea of place-based planning. I think Texas's kind of concepts of it. Does Oregon have our own concept of place-based planning? Do we know that? Is there a paper? Do we have a paper on it to tell us what it is?
That's a question for the department. Why don't we have them back up after this panel?
I just would like to get.
You're looking at me like I'm the expert.
They don't need to come up with. They can give me a paper.
Do you have questions?
I was going to say Senator Olson asked that and kind of got an answer, so maybe we can just rehash that.
Yeah. You can stay there. I don't think we're done.
You're not finished off the hot seat.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
Eric, when you talk about the Deschutes Basin, and you get this collaborative work, we love all these big words, you get this whole bunch of people together that sit down. So I guess the first question is that you've got the farmers, the ranchers, the cities, and everybody. Who runs the meeting? Who sets it up and who runs the meeting?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson. Again, a very good question, and I think the answer is going to be different in every basin. As we've heard in the past, we have had an entity that I assume would probably be reassembled for this sort of purpose called the Deschutes Water Alliance. That's not a given at this point. And again, if you look at the user list of the Deschutes Water Alliance, it's incredibly broad, and it's very inclusive, quite frankly. And depending on the planning process, they've done various planning processes in the past, and I would honestly have to look at notes to figure out who was convening, who was facilitating. But I would say it's an organization and a set of users that's very used to being in these sorts of conversations, and I can get you specific answers if you're interested in that.
The only concern I have really is the fact that we get this group together and they come up with a new plan, and I'm concerned about how it will disrupt the overall basin plan.
Yeah.
Because we know we have to follow the state laws and all of that stuff, but we have a basin plan for these 17 basins. There's one that doesn't. And then we put this group together, and suddenly their plans are divergent from what the basin plan was. And we spent a lot of time and effort on the basin plans.
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, the way that I would look at this for the Deschutes Basin, I'd have to imagine this is similar for other basins, is that this is a continuation of the effort to evolve the way we plan to use our limited water resources. Again, you know, our surface water is over-allocated. Our groundwater in the Deschutes Basin, every new use has to be completely mitigated. We don't have, we really don't have the resources to just continue to doing things without a pretty significant degree of planning. So I'd say our past planning efforts have gotten us to a certain point. We've identified a lot of solutions. We've conserved a lot of water. We've altered storage regimes. We've done a lot of creative things. But when you project out in the planning horizon, however many decades that may be, I think it's pretty clear that with continued growth in the region, we're going to need to get more creative. So we're going to need to continually evolve and improve our ability. It's not getting rid of a plan. It's not superseding a plan. It's continuing to improve that plan.
Well, which leads us to the next question. We talk planning all the time. We don't like to use the word planning, but we're planning. This does sound like it could preclude new development, and like in Bend or something like that, predicated on water, which would be a land use planning issue. Is that a reasonable assumption, or is that kind of far-fetched?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, from my perspective, there are certainly implications on land use, but when you look at the regulatory regime that we're talking about operating within, and this, of course, is not a regulatory endeavor, it's a planning endeavor. We're not talking about changing land use laws, but if there is a limitation of available water out there, it's going to force considerations. So what we're trying to do is figure, because I represent the city of Bend, we don't have any interest in seeing our growth and our economic development limited. What we want to do is figure out how we can avoid those sorts of constraints creatively. And if we don't do that, if we don't figure out how to use agricultural water more effectively, municipal water more effectively, and how to keep the right amount of water in stream at the right times, I do see us hitting shortages, and I do see land use implications. So I would say we're trying to avoid that, quite frankly.
One more follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up.
So basically then, if this group is planning and they're looking for new water resources, they would not impede the ability of Bend to continue their growth predicated on the water that's available. Would that be a good conclusion?
Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, I'd certainly hope that would be the conclusion, and we have quite a bit of faith given the relationships we have in the basin and the collaborative efforts that have happened thus far that we would find those sorts of solutions.
So then,
Senator Olson, really
sure.
Quickly. So this is a planning effort. It's not a regulatory effort.
Right.
It's simply ways to find answers, find solutions to a very real problem of quality, abundant water for Oregonians and fish and everybody. And so it's really a planning effort, not a regulatory effort. And that, to me, that's just a critical part of this discussion.
I follow up, and I agree
with
you.
Follow up, Senator Olson, then we're going to Senator Denbrough.
Thank you. I agree with you on that. Save for the fact that if a planning group comes in and desires a larger commodity of water for irrigation or whatever it may be, it will have ramifications on land use, and it will have ramifications on whoever wants to do anything on, you know, like developing a subdivision, et cetera, et cetera. Those plans are not, when people plan, that land use might be off, way off 10 years from now. And they put together a plan that will not be consistent with growth in that area. So I think it would possibly impact land use. I'm not saying it absolutely will, but I'm saying that land use is going to be a consideration we have to look at.
If I may add a little bit to that, Chair Edwards, Senator Olson, from the city's perspective, as a collaborative stakeholder in a process like this, I think part of what we would seek to do is illuminate the conversation and the rest of the stakeholders on exactly what our land use vision was, on what we were trying to accomplish. And I presume the other municipal users would do that. I presume both the counties and the cities. And I would presume there would be economic development interests represented at some level as well to seek to make sure that as we are planning, and again, not regulating, but planning, that we are bringing those visions to bear on the planning process. If we didn't do that, frankly, I think we would be more likely to run into constraints.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry,
thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, Eric largely made my point. I think that it's just crucial to have the right people at the table and, you know, also to recognize that the outcome of that of the process might be that, you know, we can't see a way to come up with a mitigation strategy. But it's, you know, it's important to have everybody at the table to come to that conclusion. But, you know, it may be that it'll be clear that because of the negative implications of doing a certain project, really we can't do that project. So that resource won't be available to us. But that's not to say that that group can't keep searching for other projects that could do appropriate mitigation or, you know, generation without adverse impact.
Okay. Any other questions for this panel?
Oh, no.
Thank you each for being here.
Thank you.
Department, do you have any other things that you want to add? Senator Thompson, did you want to hear from the department? They answered the same question for Senator Olson earlier.
So they have
it. But if you'd like them to speak to a
sure.
few of your questions.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, Members of the committee, again, for the record, Tom Beiler with the Water Resources Department. Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, we do have draft guidelines that we would be happy to get to the full committee to give you a sense of our thought process around place-based planning. There's a lot of detail in there, and this has been a collaborative process that we've been working on with counties and many other entities who have been interested in the place-based planning idea to give them some sense of what they might do. Now, these local groups who are interested in applying for resources under this program, a grant under this program, will design their own effort based on their local interest, whether they have consensus-based process or not. That's really going to be up to them. The guidelines that we've put together are essentially a template to help them think through how to build a successful process so that they can have some good success with the effort over time.
Yeah.
Well, who's the author of place-based planning?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, the guidelines that we've put together?
Yeah, who is the original author of place-based?
Who has the copyright on the term?
Yeah, I mean, it didn't come out of thin
air. Conceptually, where did it originate?
Yeah, where did it originate, where did it come from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Thompson, I don't have an answer for that. This came up during the Integrated Water Resources Strategy Development, as you heard earlier. I wasn't at the department at that time, so I wasn't sitting at the table when those conversations developed. So I don't have a sense of that, but I can try to track that down for you.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, follow
up.
On the jingle.
I just get used to saying follow up. Center follow up. No, we have here on your place-based integrated water resources planning, and this is just for your edification, Senator Thompson. Further contact information would be Alyssa Muckin and or Brenda Bateman. They were obviously part of the office of this.
Yeah, but I think if I got Senator Thompson, he's looking at the jingle of where did we come up with this concept, which is being used in multiple states and jurisdictions. Some think tank.
Okay. But I do have a question since you're back up here, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Then we do need to wrap this up.
Which is true. When these groups come together, these integrated planning groups come together, would you look and put in administrative rules and look at the makeup to make certain that all are covered and everybody's there that should be playing? Or would you just take the group per se that they send you information, this is what we'd like to do, and would you investigate to make sure that all sides are present? Would that be part of your
Mr. Chair,
purview?
Senator Olson, yes, that would be, and something in the Dash 2 amendments that we call out specifically in sub 3A we would be looking for balanced representation of interests. And the way I look at that is that we would want to make sure that, for example, if there was an effort underway in the Harney Basin and the cattlemen weren't part of it, I think that would be a bit of a problem from our standpoint, and it would not be as competitive an application for a grant if that's what we were looking at.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for being here. This has been a fascinating program to learn about. And if after the public hearing, if any of the interest groups have other thoughts, my door is always open. I'll just say that, you know, I'm leaning in favor of this. If we had unlimited everything, then we wouldn't need planning. But you know, cities could grow and farmers could farm and fish could thrive, and to the extent that the current regulatory framework advantages one group over another, then I could understand why it would behoove them to oppose a cooperative effort. But in an environment of limited resources and, you know, farmers that have pressures on their water and cities that want to continue to grow and a snowpack that hasn't been what it used to be and fish that we don't want to become endangered, it seems to me that some forward-looking planning is the way to go so we can avoid litigation and a whole lot of trouble. And we've seen where that's led in other areas of the country and even in one basin in particular in this state. So that's kind of where I'm leaning, but I'm always open to folks like Senator Thompson that have a lot more.
Just found the definition.
You found the definition.
Can I read it into the
record?
This is interesting. Place-based planning is a way to shape the future of our city, this says city, by concentrating on the look and feel of places, their form and their character, instead of focusing only on conventional categories of land use.
I'll digest that offline.
I'd say that's a think tank outside of the box.
Yeah. Okay. With that, we're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill. Excuse me. Was there anybody else that wanted to testify that hadn't signed up? Okay. We're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 266. And we have one work session, folks, to conduct. So I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 262. And you want to remind us what we're doing here with this bill, Beth?
Mm-hmm. Chair Edwards and committee members, Senate Bill 262 increases the fees for the oil spill prevention program and expands the use of the money in the fund to include planning and preparedness activities. There was the Dash 2 amendment that you have in front of you that requires the Department of Environmental Quality to report on penalties recovered for willfully or negligently discharging oils into the water of the state and under DEQ's use of the oil spillage control fund. It also extends the effective date. So that was the Dash 1 amendment that you had in front of you during the hearing. The Dash 2 amendment, the difference in that is that it takes effect on the 91st day after signing die. There is a revenue statement and a fiscal statement issued on both of these just for the purpose of referring it to the Finance and Revenue Committee.
Okay. And could we have a representative from the department and perhaps Mr. Landauer come forward? There were some concerns after the last hearing. And Mark, you'd been on the job for a total of like an hour and a half at the last hearing, and we're trying to get caught up with your clients and concerns they might have had. So maybe you can inform us whether or not we've reached a consensus solution here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mark Landauer here on behalf of the Columbia River Steamship Operators Association, now in my, second and a half week representing them. I want to thank the department. We spoke with them at some length about the concerns about when the bill would actually become operative. Before you is the Dash 2, which addresses our concerns, and we are more than happy to support the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Senator Edwards, chair members, DEQ did meet with our stakeholders, and we believe we have agreement from all stakeholders, including Columbia River Steamship Operators.
And could you state your name for the record?
Excuse me. My name is Bruce Gillis, and I manage the Emergency Response Program for Oregon DEQ.
All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Any questions from members of the committee for these fine gentlemen before we move on? Okay. Do we have a motion?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 2nd, 2015.
Senator Denbrough has moved to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 2nd, 2015. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay. Are there any objections to the motion?
I might change my mind on the floor, but I'm going to vote yes here.
Okay. So seeing no objections, so ordered. And we have a motion on the bill?
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 262 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference.
Okay. Senator Denbrough has moved Senate Bill 262 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue by prior reference. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Olson.
I'd only like to point out that DEQ has done a due diligence back in 2008 anticipating cargo that comes in through our port. And I think due to their or because of their chart, which lays out very distinctly that the cargo has fallen off, I think that shows a good state of our economy in Portland. And it's troubling to see that, for example, on the tank vessels we were talking about, they predicted 80 annual events, and we're down to 32, which to me indicates a poor economy in this area. But I will vote to move this bill forward.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay, we have the motion in front of us. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. And this bill is on its way to the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee. So we are going to close the work session on Senate Bill 262. And Beth, anything else before us today? Got it all done? Thank you, folks, for a good committee hearing. Lots of good questions. And so we will be adjourned.